Yeah, we're skipping church too. This is Sports Sunday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810, hour number 2 of 3. We're with you till noon. Later on today, we'll get you all ready with Selection Sunday, taking BP. I'm sticking with that.
You're already trying to, like, tell me I wasn't playing the legal ID in the break.
I was giving you garbage during the break because I felt like I didn't hear you play the legal ID, so people know that you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City. You played it. Here's what I can say now. I did accuse you during the break right before we came back of not playing legal ID. Apparently, you actually did, Chris Bolig, who's running the show today. And I will pivot from saying no longer saying that you didn't play legal ID to saying that you played it at an. And did you turn my mic off just then?
Accidentally.
Well-oiled machine here at Sports Radio 810. It's fine. Everything is fine.
That was for you accusing me of not playing the legal at the break.
You know what? You can go. Happen again.
If you cannot see, that was
It's an audio medium.
Josh just turned off his own mic.
Nobody can prove that, you steaming pile.
And there it goes again.
Wow, I mean, that's incredible. Why would you do that to me so many times over? I can't believe this is ridiculous.
Ah, Briscoe.
So I promised earlier, we'll talk a little. We talked a little KU and also my milk problems. You can go to Edger B. Briscoe if you missed that. I got a poll question. And I promised you we'd talk some Chiefs things, and we'll do that now because I didn't get to talk about it at all yesterday. And any day not talking about Chiefs free agency means something's gone terribly wrong. So I'm with you here today to give you a little bit of an update. There's a lot going on. First of all, I think – let me give you this on the Tyreek Hill front. First off, that story broke at about 3:59 on Friday, and I'm live on ESPN Kansas City from 4 to 6. So at about 3:59, we're also out at No Other Pub for FanFest. Beards said down the line, said, hey, have you seen this Tyreek Hill story? I said, no, what is it? He said, it's not good, read the thing. So for 3 straight hours, 2 hours of almost no other sports and an hour over here on Sports Night, we talked about the fact that there's a lot that we don't know, and then also things like the benefits of the doubt that Tyreek Hill does deserve legally, but I would argue hasn't earned, amongst public opinion and all of that. And if you want to get my thoughts specifically on where we're at right now with Tyreek Hill, nothing new has happened in the last 36 hours or whatever. So I'll refer you over to, especially I would say that third hour we did with Sportsnet, because the first 2 hours were very much trying to wade through the information and all of that. If you want to hear the full thought process, thinking out loud and everything, you are welcome to do that. I would love it if you would subscribe to Almost Entirely Sports wherever you get your podcasts, because that's a great way to consume radio. But if you want to go check out the Sports Night page on the 810 mobile app or 810WHB.com, either of those places you can get the hour of Sports Night we did on Friday night whenever I give you a pretty boiled down version, I think, of where we're at with Tyreek Hill, and also a lot of people going a lot of different directions on Twitter and all of that, with different criticisms or disagreements that I think I appropriately either answered or dispatched. You can grab all that in the hour of Sports Night we did on Friday. If you're interested in going down that line, I think it's pretty interesting. Also, legitimately, as we started the show, I began talking about the seriousness of this complicated topic. And as I began to dive in, the KU band began playing the KU fight song as loudly as possible in No Other Pub. So the background of me reading the Kansas City Star article is brum, 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 brum. Bump, 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 just as loud as possible. So it's a really good sonic experience if you'd like to hop in throughout all of that madness that was. But outside of that, we've got a bunch of Chief stories that we do have information on. And, of course, if anything new is out of the Tyreek Hill story throughout the show today, we'll get you there. If it happens, if anything breaks throughout the week, we'll get it to you here on Sports Radio 810 over on ESPN Kansas City from 4 to 6 as well. We'll let you know. But as of right now, there's nothing that I can say additionally to all the stuff I said on Friday. So here's some like actual roster based stuff. I was gonna say on the field stuff, but we're not even close to being on the field yet. I really enjoy the free agency season. And I was realizing this around Eric Berry being released, where a lot of Chiefs fans were very emotional, and there's a huge emotional connection with Eric Berry. And I think it was Sam Mellinger that had written about how at his best, not Superman himself could have gotten the Chiefs farther at the safety position than Eric Berry did, and couldn't have salvaged underwhelming seasons. And whenever his presence actually could have made a difference, he was left chasing Rob Gronkowski in the AFC Championship game, or not playing throughout this season where they were closer to a Super Bowl than they've been at any point in my lifetime. I think that's very poetic, and I hope I didn't misattribute it. I think it was a Mellinger thing. If I'm going to misattribute something well-written to Sam, I probably owe him one. Throughout all of that, though, fans were understandably, by the way, I'm not to like be dismissive, understandably pretty upset just by Eric Berry no longer being a member of the Chiefs. But as all of that was happening, I was like scrolling through over the cap, and I'm figuring out kind of the spending situation that the Chiefs are at right now. And not because I'm some cyborg above emotions or that I'm better than that or anything. I wasn't feeling some overwhelming emotion. Possibly because we've kind of gone through all of the stages of that throughout the season, where Eric Berry had been so kind of in and out. But I also wasn't, I'm not like angry at Eric Berry for being hurt or maybe sitting out games that he could have played in, whatever. It's not even that either. I'm just, I can't help but to look at the motion of this free agency season. And I partially have to attribute that, I think, to just, like, I played GM mode a lot on, like, Madden 06 on PC. I would legitimately sim through the seasons to get to the off seasons to go do all the roster construction and everything. I'm assuming that's weird, but I've thought about that a lot this week.
Well, and to your point about, you know, the whole Eric Berry situation, I mean, as people in the media, as media members, you take your emotion out of your fanhood, essentially.
I don't think so.
I don't know. That's just my sense. At least for me, it's like, yes, I'm a huge Chiefs fan and I love the Chiefs, but since I've like started doing more radio and, you know, taking myself, you know, trying to take my emotional state out of it, essentially,
yeah,
kind of when I go on the air or something like that, to come at it from like a more unbiased standpoint.
You can do that, but again, that's a strategy, that's a move.
At least for college teams too. College teams, I think it's more of a.
But here's the thing though, like if you are listening as a KU fan to a host that you know has KU allegiances, or a K-State fan to a K-State allegiance, or a Mizzou fan to Mizzou allegiances, that's something that you have as a connection point with those people. And it's very different. People conflate radio and reporters a lot, and sometimes, you know, there's a crossover. But radio is an entertainment business, and I mm-hmm. think, and I've worked around and with lots of people on either side of that, where, again, like, there are people that have been in Kansas City for a long time that aren't fans in the traditional sense. There are people that come in from out of town that are, you know, either challenged by or helped by a relative lack of bias, all of that. But I think especially in Kansas City, talking about the Chiefs, I don't think there's a prerequisite for abandoning fanhood. I think the closer you get to teams and to the games and stuff, the more that that's kind of ground at. But I think that keeping that is...
I think I'll take that. I'll redact that statement. I think with at least being in Kansas City, sport or college-wise, fans get very heated, I think, more about their own college team. Let's say, you know, you have
that's
a Missouri
true.
Fan, Kansas State. Like, if you're talking bad about one of their teams, they'll let you know it.
Right,
and you'll
but,
see it
but
on
even
Twitter.
Even that, especially whenever you're looking at radio, that's fine, man.
Well, yeah, that's
how
that's
that,
good,
that heat,
like, that's
that
good radio.
Works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
but I'm just saying in that perspective, because some people will be like, oh, well, you're leaning too far. Like, people get frustrated about that.
No, and they do. And I think largely they need to get over. So tonight I'm going to be on Sunday Standoff on 41 with Mick Schaefer. I don't know who else yet. But Mick, like, last night was getting tweets from like this K-State fan who tweeted him, like, how are you going to get over this loss for your Jayhawks? And it's just – a couple weeks ago, he had been accused of being a Mizzou fan and by a KU fan. And Mick is an Oklahoma State fan.
Go Pokes.
So sometimes you can't win in that regard. I don't know what you can possibly do with people like that. And so in those instances, that's on the viewer or can't fix you in that regard. And I get it all the time. And I went to Mid-America Nazarene University. Like, I got nothing.
Rocky Lamar.
For you. Yes, 100%. My guy. 100%.
I used to go to his camp as a middle schooler.
Yes, that might be Mid-America's biggest claim to fame at the moment. and also, I can't. No, we'll just hold that. I'll put that one back in my pocket. Just everyone listening know I had a really good joke, but that's fine. Yeah, so like I don't subscribe to that school of thought, especially at this point. For me, the Chiefs fandom is the only one that I think I have like a significant amount of. Like, rooting for the Royals is easy enough, and rooting for the local teams. Oh, I'm a Suns fan, but I never have to talk about the Suns, and also they're a nightmare, and no one cares if I root for the Suns or not because again they're a nightmare.
Were you a big Suns fan? Like, when did this start?
My grandparents moved to Arizona when I was, and I needed
an allegiance. So, like, when Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire and Mike D'Antoni, Sean Marion.
Yep, and then
Leandro Barbosa, I think, was also on that team.
Yeah, and there's been nothing but suffering since. Yeah. My then Phoenix, now Arizona Coyotes, deep, deep love has also been nothing but terribly rewarding. But I'm not, like, trying to remove – I've never been trying to remove fandom in that regard. I have a general cynicism about me, I think, especially whenever it comes to sort of, like, a deification of players and, you know, deification of athletes in general, where you look at them as being, you know, like, beyond human because they do beyond human things athletically. And Eric Berry probably has a better argument for that than most people but that's all – even that also kind of – I don't know. It's interesting to me. Getting through cancer and, like, whatever, gaining a pound or something during the workouts is, like, objectively incredible. But even whenever – so the base point of all of that being whenever the Chiefs cut Eric Berry, who, like, is an icon of the town from a bunch of different levels and a team that I actively root for and feel no need to try to, like, minimize that or whatever – I was just kind of in off-season Madden mode, and I was a little bit surprised by that. Also, there's just been a lot of that over the last few seasons, because what I would argue is probably the prime of my, like, growing up fandom was Tom Bahaly and Derek Johnson and Justin Houston and Eric Berry. Bad quarterbacks and Alex Smith, you know, that
Tyler Thigpen, baby.
Love me some Tyler Thigpen.
I actually, the first year, my dad had season tickets through, you know, from 90 to like 99 or 2000, I believe, just, you know, right in the heyday with Marty.
Yeah.
Then he stopped, you know, the season tickets.
Yep.
And then he wanted to split some season tickets with, you know, one of his friends, like an 8-game package. So I got to go to 2 games that season. I saw the only home win. Larry Johnson's last great game is against the Denver Broncos. Damon Heward was actually quarterbacking that team. And it was their 2-14 season.
I might have been at that game.
They were the only other win they had that season was against Oakland, I believe. And they were like 2-14. I think they picked Glenn Dorsey next year, that year after
that. I don't
that.
Think they were 2-14 because Glenn Dorsey was 5th overall. Do not step to me. That would have been 2004?
That would have been, no, 2009. Because then Damon Heward got hurt, and I think Tyler Thigpen took over.
The Jeff Glenn Dorsey. Okay, welcome to Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 10. We're Googling Glenn Dorsey today. That's what we're doing. He was drafted in 2008, so that would have been 2007, if that was the year that the Chiefs were miserable.
Maybe it was, because I remember it was like 2000, because it was 2008-2009 season, so like, Okay, yeah, it would have been.
My mom has chimed in to say that I was at that game, by the way.
Yeah,
my mom just messaged
Larry Johnson's last great game as a Chief.
I was at the. There was a Chiefs. Chiefs Bears game where Priest Holmes broke the single season touchdown record. I was at that game. That was exciting. I was at a good. Do you remember the Browns Chiefs game that ended up like both teams were in the 30s because Josh Cribbs had like three touchdowns and everything was psycho? That game was painful. There was a lot going on. Jerome Harrison,
their running back, had like 235 yards.
Yes.
And then, okay, so I was 2008 season 2-14. They were.
How are they 2-14 picking fifth?
Well, no, they were in. I think you said Glenn Dorsey was drafted in 08, so he would have been a rookie if I'm not mistaken. In the, because it would have been 2008, 2009, like Super Bowl. You know. Like,
okay, I see.
All the years and everything. It's always hard because you equate it with. You know, when the play, you know, because the playoffs start right after.
So you're,
you know,
saying, so, well, no. So if that was the next year, the Chiefs had backed, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe the Chiefs went 5 overall Glenn Dorsey and then 3 overall Tyson Jackson.
Yeah. So they went 4-12 in 2007 and then they went 2-14 again.
That must have been the 0-16. It was the 0-16 Lions. And that Rams team only won one game and picked second. This is a very good radio show that we're doing right now. Not even close to what I want. Yep, boom, nailed it. So in 2009, you got the 0-16 Lions. The top of the league must have been pretty good that year. In 2008 season and 2009 draft, the Lions went 0-16 and took Matt Stafford. The Rams went 1-15 and then took tackle Jason Smith. At 3 overall. The Chiefs took Tyson Jackson. I remember wanting them to draft Aaron Curry, the linebacker, who also did virtually nothing. Mark Sanchez went 5. Andre Smith to the Bengals. A little Darius Hayward Bay at 7 action.
The old 40-yard dash, Oakland Raiders classic, just speed, speed, speed.
Oh, so good.
He kind of, like, Darius Hayward Bay, I think, DK Metcalf has Darius Hayward Bay written all over him, I think, low-key.
That's not a bad take. I mean, like, we got to see Darius Hayward Bay's, like, NFL career be super underwhelming, so that feels kind of unfair.
2009, Ryan Succop, Mr. Irrelevant.
That's important. You're right. Very important. By the way, here, let's ride this wave for a second. I really like this game of pick a draft. How important was it? Because we freaking love draft season, right? Everyone loves draft season, and it's all hope. If you're the Cardinals, You're gonna get one of the defensive linemen that are gonna either gonna be Aaron Donald or D Ford, I guess. you're either getting Aaron Donald or Joey Bosa, and getting Quinnen Williams or Nick Bosa, I think. They're gonna wreck the league. Then the whole way down the draft, it's the quarterbacks and it's the position players, and then it's, ooh, are the Chiefs going to trade up? Will they trade up to 20 and get their weapon of the future? Just 20 in 2009. Remember Brandon Pettigrew? Tight end from Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. This is me throwing a needless wet blanket over draft type season. I'm going to rattle through some names here. I already gave you 1-7 to Darius Hayward Bay. Two of those players mattered, I would say. Mark Sanchez mattered in a way, but it wasn't a great fifth overall pick. Matt Stafford mattered in the grand, you know, scheme of the NFL. BJ Raji at 9, but he's been a weird story.
He's been pretty consistent, though. I would consider him for that draft, like, he's made some Pro Bowls.
You hear the rest of the names here, and you're going to think that BJ Raji should be in the Hall of Fame. At 10, Michael Crabtree. Aaron Maben at 11. How about some No'Shawn Moreno at 12?
The crying gif of him just like, remember?
Was that No'Shawn Moreno?
Yes, that was. Where,
wow, you're right.
I think
right.
It was against the Chiefs, too.
It might have been. Brian Arakpo, Malcolm Jenkins, Brian Cushing, 3 Pro Bowlers in a row.
Brian Arakpo retired. I believe Cushing is also not playing anymore.
I believe that you're right. And this is the 2009 draft. So it's been, you know, it's been a while. But Larry English, I remember the Chargers, the San Diego Chargers at the time, drafting Larry English and being worried about it. I don't remember why. I remember people being like, oh, Larry English, the Chargers, what a great pick, followed up by Josh Freeman.
Love it.
I mean, there's just a lot. You want to get to guys who have retired. You get some Jeremy Maclin in here eventually, a little Michael Oher action. Then Vontae Davis, who retired recently mid-game. It's very exciting. You want to get more recent, go like 2014? Of course.
Well, I was just, I wanted to give props to the 08 Chiefs draft. Other than Glenn Dorsey, it wasn't a terrible draft for them. You got Brandon Albert, Brandon Flowers, Jamal Charles,
it was a great
and
draft.
Brandon Carr in the fifth round. So I'll give props there, but that Glenn Dorsey pick was just horrible. And then they went with another LSU defensive lineman the year after.
Next year, two picks higher. Okay, so like here, this is I think that these guys are going to be a really good moving back 5 years. I think is enough time to like actually evaluate a draft and like the grading system that you do day of is ridiculous. But here you get a real point of reference. So like Jadeveon Clowney goes first, and he's made a bunch of Pro Bowls, but he's also on the franchise tag now. The Texans might not be totally thrilled with him, and he definitely hasn't been the world consumer that you thought he was going to be.
Well, I mean,
first
you got
to
think about Jadeveon. Like, you saw him in high school showcases. Like, he was huge, huge. Like, everyone was hyping him so hard. And then he had that one
the play against Michigan.
Against Michigan. And then everyone was just like, oh, my God, this guy is a sure first overall pick.
And he was, and the Texans took him over any of the quarterbacks. Now you look at the quarterbacks, you say, all right, I thought that was okay. Because second, Greg Robinson. The Rams took a tackle that I cannot picture his face. I don't think he's on the roster anymore. They ended up with the second overall pick and took a tackle no one's ever heard of. Then the Jags talked themselves into Blake Bortles, which is hilarious. The Bills at four, Sammy Watkins, a guy who obviously has now been on is on his third team, had injury issues. He's a receiver that goes at four overall. Whenever a receiver goes at four overall, you're expecting absolute psychosis from him. Unfortunately for Sammy Watkins, that might have come in the form of lizard people and not production. Khalil Mack at five was excellent. Jake Matthews at six. He's a tackle. Played at A&M. Drafted by the Falcons. I got nothing. He made a Pro Bowl, apparently. I don't know. Mike Evans is great. Justin Gilbert. Cornerback to the Browns. Nothing. Anthony Barr. Very good player. Now is making too much money. But he's still at his original team in Minnesota. Eric Ebron. Shrug. And you go down a little bit. Like there's actually a stretch in this draft of 9 through 17 where every single one of those guys made a Pro Bowl. Odell Beckham and Aaron Donald go back-to-back. But so let me throw this into the mix. The Rams took Greg Robinson at 2 and then Aaron Donald at 13. I don't want to say that the draft is merely throwing darts because that's unfair. However, the idea that the Rams like truly began building their Super Bowl run whenever they took Aaron Donald in 2014 is pretty silly considering that he wasn't even their first draft pick. And their first draft pick was a stinker. Johnny Manziel went 22.
I mean, granted, like NFL 2014, an Aaron Donald-esque, you weren't seeing too many of those guys go, you know, top five at that point comparative to now where, like,
but
the
but
emphasis
you,
on.
But you pick the wrong tackle at 2. Like, I just – the thing about it
true.
Is that you – listen, you can absolutely make good picks. That's clear. Like, and that was the year that the Chiefs took D Ford. We talked about Jason Verrett this offseason a bunch. He's never stayed healthy, but, like, the Chargers got him at 25. There are value picks to have as you go through the draft, but also there's almost always a huge drop off after that first sort of tier of guys, and that is proven to be true. Whenever you start scrolling down the basically the spreadsheet on the Wikipedia page, but also varies so much from year to year, where that starts falling apart. In 2015, you get people talking about quarterback draft classes, right? In 2015, you get a quarterback 1 and 2, and it's Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, and neither one of those guys are ever going to win anything. Like, it's just, we can pretty much wrap that one up. There's just such a huge variance throughout the draft, and especially whenever you get to later. And this is a soapbox I've been on a lot, where people have been talking about how the Chiefs don't actually need to add another safety because they have Armani Watts. Armani Watts played in like 5 games. He had like 3 or 4 pass breakups. I think he had a pick on a play that was negated by a penalty somewhere on throughout the play because he didn't record a pick throughout the year. And that's the reason that you don't want the Chiefs to be pursuing Trey Boston right now. Like, that's crazy. But people love doing that because I could talk to you, you know, about Duvernay-Tardif, great late-round pick, whatever, and still, you know, very good start and everything. But that's not really moving the needle for most teams. Jay Ajayi was he made a Pro Bowl out of the 5th round, but you don't think of that as being terribly, like, franchise reorienting. But the point of all of that, the Chiefs did get a Pro Bowl in the 5th round that year, actually. It was DJ Alexander as a special teamer. His name is in yellow, though, now on the Wikipedia page, because that's he made a Pro Bowl. Look, we talked about Raheem Nunez-Roches in like an unreasonable amount of time. And I'm sure that, hold on, I lost his name. Roches. I'm sure that I know that this did happen some. That in Houston, the pick before, they took Christian Covington, another defensive tackle. I'm sure that they talked about Christian Covington in training camp that year more than they should have, because that's what you do. Whenever you're looking at late and mid-round draft picks, you largely talk about the guys that are on your roster way more than you would talk about anybody else. The Chiefs now have signed Damian Wilson. He went 127 that year. So we're talking about Damian Wilson a bunch this offseason, right? We talked about Ramique Wilson that went 9 picks higher that season. Ramique Wilson now is nothing. I think he's still in L.A. He might have been a free agent after last season. But Ramique Wilson completely leaves your mind whenever he's not playing for your team. We didn't know bleep about Damian Wilson before he ended up here this offseason. So there's a sort of a self-fulfilling bias. That's fine. We're talking about the guys that are around here. But don't overvalue the dudes way down the draft chart or even some of the guys that are picked fairly highly. There is no cosmic reason that Tano Pasino and Breland Speaks like deserve to be better, because usually guys in that range are at the very least a considerable crapshoot. Sorry to throw a wet blanket on draft season. Don't worry, we're still in free agency season. Draft season, SZN, isn't even here yet. And by the time it gets here, I'll be super ready for all the hype. I want to talk about it as it's happening. I'm excited to see where Kyler Murray goes. But here's the harsh truth. Most of it doesn't matter. Spoiler alert. Most of the draft will not affect the overall fluctuation of the league. The best quarterbacks will. Missed picks very highly will. Lots of guys on the line will be contributors. Lots of those guys will be out of the league in 3 or 4 years. How did this segment get so negative? I wanted to talk about Madden, playing Madden and Eric Berry and where the Chiefs are going now.
Well, we started talking about the 2-14 2008-2009 Chiefs.
We started talking about the 2-14 2008-2009 Chiefs?
You participated in that.
I mean, it's like you just said you brought Molly to a party, and then everyone did Molly, and so it's everyone's fault. You were the supplier of the sadness throughout that segment.
You had a decision.
You were the dealer of sadness. I just wanted a party drug.
It's true.
This segment brought to you by illicit substances, I guess, and also Chris Bowling. Those two things, in my mind, being basically synonymous. You're listening to Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810. We got very emo about old Chiefs teams in the NFL draft last segment. I imagine we're pretty much going to just double down with actively available free agents. I know this song, by the way. I don't need more information on... hold on. It's Something of the Sun by...
Empire of the Sun.
Empire of the Sun.
Walking on a Dream.
Okay. I was trying to get to the chorus in my head. Thrill of it. That's all I got. Yep, great. Excellent. Very good. Tell me whenever we're back, Chris. I'm just gonna sing to myself throughout the rest of the commercial break. Oh, we're live. Oh, God. So a couple of things that happened this weekend that that may not have made it to your radar. Where we started last segment was the Chiefs cut Eric Berry and traded Justin Houston. Nope, said it wrong. Traded D Ford, and they previously cut Justin Houston, freeing up a bunch of cap space. And the Eric Berry money, if you're a salary cap like nerd, you are about to correct me on something, and I just save it. And if you're not, to give it to you as simply as possible here, you shouldn't worry about the Eric Berry post June 1st designation all that much. Basically, what's going to happen is that the Chiefs can't currently, quote unquote, spend Eric Berry's cap money that they freed up by releasing him until June 1st. But that will essentially just be used to sign their rookies, or it will be money they get to use during the season if someone gets hurt and they need to sign someone else in free agency or any number of things in that regard. Maybe it gets used for a contract extension to Justin Houston. Maybe they'll use it for a contract extension for Chris Jones. Could be Tyreek Hill at this point. The parking brake has to be thrown on that conversation until you know what's going on with Tyreek Hill. But if all of that clears up, you can look at that conversation again, I guess. But even without the Eric Berry money being, again, very loose quotation marks here, spendable, the Chiefs have a lot of money at the moment. They freed up all that D Ford money that definitely, like, I had certainly acknowledged that was an option for the Chiefs, and that if they were going to go that direction and release or trade D Ford, it almost certainly had to be a trade. They could have taken the tag off, but the trade seems like the only real feasible option. In retrospect, I do wonder about that. But if they were to release Justin Houston and trade D Ford, both, it would have freed up a huge chunk of money, and that's what they did. So now they have a nice spendable cushion against the salary cap, and they still haven't released Dan Sorensen and Eric Murray. Xavier Williams might be in that conversation. And I also would understand them holding on to all of those guys until there are, you know, replacements in the wings. As little as I think of the overall impact of Dan Sorensen, you'd rather have him than to release him and then realize that you are in a bad place as far as safety depth going in the training camp or whatever. So there's still more space to be created. Of course, Tyrann Mathieu is going to be a sizable hit this first year. But I don't think those contract details, I think I would know if those contract details have come out at all yet. And I don't think we have anything on his like first year cap hit. His average yearly value is not necessarily going to be the first year cap hit. So noting that those two things will likely be different. So right now on Over the Cap, Tyrann Mathieu's got a $6 million cap hit for this season. So if you sign off on that, which I imagine is correct, I don't know where that number came from, but Over the Cap is usually extremely good information. Obviously, his hit is much higher next year. It's 16. The year after that would be 19.7 if he's here, but if they cut him in 2021, they only have to carry $5 million in dead caps, but they free up 15. It's basically a two-year deal for Tyrann Mathieu. But it's stacked so they have even more money this year than I was thinking they would have 30 seconds ago, where it's only $6 million to Mathieu with all the money they're freeing up from cutting Berry, cutting Houston, and trading D Ford. So where does that money go? Well, they signed Alex Okafor, and Seth Kizer of The Athletic, I'll talk to him on Tuesday over on ESPN Kansas City at 5 o'clock. Again, also always available if you just search Almost Entirely Sports, wherever you get your podcast. It's the name of that show. And we'll talk to him about it to break all that down on Tuesday at 5. But seeing what Okafor does in this scheme will be really interesting. And I do think there's a little bit of an overreaction to the idea of D-Ford not being a quote-unquote fit in this defense. However, he played at a really light playing weight last year, and Okafor's got like 20 or 30 pounds on him, if memory serves. So he'll be a very stout run defender, and hopefully gets to the quarterback enough to check off one of those boxes. So now you have Okafor and Speaks and Passanio as your three edge guys, even as the two positions in Spagnuolo's defense are very different. Your strong side position is going to be lined up, you know, more as a traditional defensive end, but the weak side slash nine tech slash Leo, whatever, is going to be set out wider and doing more of a kind of a pure pass rushing thing. I think that would have been a more natural fit for D Ford, certainly between those two positions. But the Chiefs don't really have a guy that is built for that spot currently on the roster, in my loose estimation. I don't think it's Okafor. I don't think it Speaks. Passanio is probably the closest to having the speed and athleticism to pull that off, but I don't know what this regime thinks of Tano Passanio. Last year, he couldn't get on the field, so that's a big question mark. But the Chiefs were also apparently interested in Marcus Golden for a while, but he's out of the picture. So Okafor is the guy they ended up signing with a pretty sizable three-year, $18 million deal. Could be worth up to $24 million. He's going to get considerable playing time, as will the aforementioned linebacker whose name is not Damian Williams, Damian Wilson. The Chiefs have Darrell Williams, Damian Williams, and Damian Wilson all on the same team. He's going to be added to that strong side linebacker position where he's probably starting there day one. I do wonder how the rest of that position shakes out. Pretty much everyone on Twitter with that signing was saying that it'll be Damian Wilson on the strong side, Hitchens on the weak, and Reggie Ragland returning and playing that Mike position. That would be a little bit surprising to me. I think the hate has gone way too far on Reggie Ragland, where he is certainly limited, but he's not a toad. Like, the disdain for Ragland in general is, I think, largely people wishing he was Derek Johnson, and he's not, and that's fine. He can play his role in this defense in a way that totally makes sense. It does mean Dorian O'Daniel's not playing the weak side spot, and the Hitchens is, which would be a little bit frustrating, because I think Dorian O'Daniel has a lot of potential, especially in a scheme like this. I think this is a really natural fit for him as a weak side linebacker in a 4-3 defense. But as much as defenses fluctuate, if O'Daniel's just coming in sub packages to be a linebacker that can either blitz or be in coverage, whatever, doesn't really have to worry about the run as much, that's a pretty reasonable fit for him at this point. Again, like, I don't want to fall in love with draft picks that haven't shown us reasons to be that in love with them. O'Daniel being off the field in obvious running situations makes enough sense to me. Doesn't hurt my feelings any. So with those two additions, though, being noted, and of course Tyrann Mathieu, the Chiefs have quite a bit of money left to spend and not that many places to spend it. Ronald Darby was in town, but he ended up signing back with the Eagles on a one-year deal, and he's coming off of an ACL, so maybe he was only looking for a one-year deal to sort of prove his health and his talent level at this point and then hit the free agent market again in a year. Maybe the Chiefs were looking for a long-term deal with Darby to try to maximize him at a low value. And then Bengals cornerback Darquise Dennard, who was interviewing with the Chiefs, working out with the Chiefs, whatever. There's a report out now that he's looking for $10 million a year, and that feels like a very high price to pay for Darquise Dennard specifically. It's also why it seems like the Bengals weren't retaining him, even as he was a good player for them last year. It's a lot of money. So we look at now a defense that has one safety that's established, one cornerback that's established, and maybe a cross your fingers and hope on Tre'Davious Ward. Cross your fingers and hope on Armani Watts, too, if you'd like. And one established but also brand new to the system defensive end slash pass rusher. The problem is the free agent market doesn't have a lot to give. With the secondary having as many holes as it still does, the entire defense having as many holes as it still does, the Chiefs have a lot of money and no obvious place to put it. If they can find guys on one-year deals they could spend a bunch on to try to bolster it up in the short term and then hit the market again next year, that would make a lot of sense. But most of those big names are off the table at this point, where you really are looking at second and third tier guys. And you can look ahead to the draft, and through the draft is how you're going to build a more sustainable, long-term sort of dynasty, really, as if you're surrounding Patrick Mahomes with other guys that have a very low cap hit, especially as his increases. But right now, whenever you're looking at 2019 specifically, the Chiefs have a lot of money and not a lot of reasonable places to put it, and it puts them in a really interesting position where they've had opportunities to improve both by strides in important positions or by smaller steps in a lot of positions. Even those guys, though, are beginning to thin out.
Well, going back to your point about like building a defense, you know, through the draft. I mean, look at the best defenses in the NFL over maybe the past eight seasons or whatever you may, however far back mm-hmm. you go. But look at the Legion of Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, all guys that, you know, were, I believe, in their first year contracts or very recent of that. Also, you know, with the Jaguars last year, all the, like, Jalen Ramsey, Barry Church, all these guys are coming on. You know, you got to get the most out of your guys in that first 4 years.
Right.
And especially if you're going to have to pay Patrick Mahomes, like you said, you got to get, you can't have D Ford, who, you know, had a great contract season, but the past 3 years before that wasn't even on the field and wasn't productive as much when he was on the field.
And in both of those instances with the Seahawks and the Jags, those defenses started, the Jags are just getting there, but especially with Seattle, that defense started falling apart whenever they got priced out. And especially whenever you're paying a quarterback that much money, the money they're paying Russell Wilson. And so that's something the Chiefs have to be wary of. But again, in the short term, you don't want to be stuck in a year where you think you're going to be a favorite, where you are a favorite for a Super Bowl with money left in your pocket, even as you go to the draft. You can be looking to build to the draft, and I think they're certainly going to do with a corner, maybe a safety, and certainly a pass rusher very, very highly. You can go that direction with all reasonability. But right now, again, they've had chances to continue to improve in free agency in a couple of places, and they haven't yet, and it's making me a little bit nervous. We'll talk about it a little bit more. We'll pivot around the rest of the world of sports in an hour, or for the next hour, in about... Welcome back to Sports Sunday here on Sports Radio 810. I am Josh Briscoe, Chris Bullig's running the show. Scratching records in the haze. I can't even, I'm not going to try to explain it. Sometimes you have to listen to every single syllable that I utter over the course of a week to understand all the references, and that's okay. No one, you shouldn't. You shouldn't do that, but you could. It'd be a lot, especially this week. Maybe if you just like play all the podcasts of everything that I do while you're sleeping or something, you'll get the jokes subconsciously. Maybe. Anyway, we have a few more minutes here to talk Chiefs. And to that end, you can fairly, here's the end of the argument I'm going to build, okay? I'll give you the end first. Dessert first. It's okay if you're not completely confident in Brett Veach right now, because this defense is the thing that's most important to overhaul. You have to be protecting Patrick Mahomes. I don't just mean with the offensive line. I mean by giving him weapons that he can work with, right? And again, right now, Tyreek Hill at least being in, like, nobody move mode. With the defense, though, which is so important at this point, to just build competence. I told you last segment, I think the Chiefs are largely looking to the draft. Like, they still have a couple moves they need to make in free agency. They need to bring in another member of the secondary. I would say ideally it's another corner period. It's a corner and another safety. But as you look to the draft, the things that Brett Veach has been investing in so far has been a little bit worrisome, especially defensively. Because on the draft front, his first pick last year, the guy that he traded up for, was Breeland Speaks. And I'm not terribly confident in Breeland Speaks' fit in the NFL in general. This year's defense will make more sense, but it wasn't the scheme whenever they drafted Breeland Speaks, so I don't know exactly what the hope was there. That's all a little bit concerning. And if you're going to be kind of looking to find optimism elsewhere in Brett Veach's talent evaluation, the later draft picks were kind of, you know, we're just waiting to find out on those guys. They paid big money to Anthony Hitchens, and that was disastrous last year, like absolutely disastrous. And they paid him in a way that priced them out of getting Tyrann Mathieu last season, by the way. which would have probably, if you could have swapped out Anthony Hitchens for Tyrann Mathieu last year, we're at least talking about the Chiefs being in a Super Bowl, like undeniably. There are mistakes made last year. And this offseason, that simply can't be the case. The Chiefs need to cash in, especially in this last year while Patrick Mahomes is on a rookie contract. Anything less than a repeat of last year, I think, would be clearly seen as a failure, and only fairly. Sorry to be a downer on St. Patrick's Day. It's all right. It's Sports Sunday on Sports Radio 810.